Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Willie Lawson. The name of the show is Fight Back. We appreciate you being here this morning. And it's kind of morning here. It's just a little afternoon. Planned on doing this about 7 minutes ago. But, you know, it is what it is. And not only it is what it is, it is what it is all the time. I'd like to quick mention, I did a show a couple of nights ago and having this conversation with this brother about the last show I did was called The Rise of the Non-Liberal Black Person. And apparently Blog Talk Radio's direct connection cut out probably 29 minutes into that show and into the middle of that conversation with that caller. I'd like to express my apologies. I want everybody to know, you know, if you listen to that show, it was not me that hung up. I did not hang up and end the show because I couldn't break his argument or because I was angry or, you know, I was just low key being a dick. It blew up. And if you've been on Blog Talk Radio any length of time, you know that stuff happens. And again, I apologize. And he's welcome to call back. He was from Atlanta, as I remember. Welcome to call back anytime and have a conversation. It was very cool. But today I want to talk about something that that's been pressing on me a little bit. But before I get there, I want to acknowledge the remembrances of 9/11. That was yesterday. I didn't do any social media yesterday. For me, it's become one of those things that a lot of people get a lot of mileage on social media. You know what, on Patriots Day, on 9/11, because they will post, you know what, this heart-rending stuff. You know, I saw somebody post pictures of people jumping out of the World Trade Center, you know what, close up so you can see their face. Of course, the hashtag never forget, you know, I get all that. But I wonder why, you know, I always kind of look behind the motives of that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, goodness. So I decided that I just would not talk yesterday. Other than talking with people that I have to talk to here in my own life, I didn't do a program. The only thing I did last night was that I did a vlog for my wife's wife and I do a relationship channel on YouTube, and I did a cleaning the kitchen vlog at midnight. Actually, no, it was later than that. It was after midnight. It was almost like 1 o'clock this morning. And that's it. I like to, again, for those that have lost people in that terrible tragedy, my condolences still go out to them and the people who are suffering from cancers and the like, and in the aftermath of all of that, our heartfelt prayers go out to them. And all we can do is make sure that we do all we can to make sure that sort of disaster, that sort of terror, that sort of awfulness never happens in our country again. And I think that if it happens anywhere, I think that's the prayer of anywhere, that this never happens again, that we do all we can to make sure it never happens again. There you go. And that's my 9/11 thing. You know what? And I'll tell you what, if you are a 9/11 truther and you're on my Facebook page, if I haven't unfriended you and blocked you yet, I will. I'm not having that discussion. not having that discussion. Real people died. Real people died. So this is not one of those things where I'm about any sort of political discussion. Real people died. So I'm just not going to talk about it and get into theories about who killed them. I'm just not going to. I saw what I saw like everybody else. And because of what I saw, people died. All right. Here we go. The title of the program today is What Does Racism Mean Anymore? You know, when I was working out titles, I said there's been a degradation of the term racism. Because tied up in this maze of what is acceptable and offensive, I think racism has taken a hit. And what I mean is that the definition has been lost to an extent. Don't you think? And now it's sort of a broad term for what people don't like. No? It's just like sort of speech and activity that people don't like that get tossed into racism. The Google Dictionary defines racism as a noun, prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism directed against someone of a different race based on the belief. This is the important part. Based on the belief that one's own race is superior. The belief that all members of each race possess characteristics or abilities specific to that race, especially so as to distinguish it as inferior or superior to another race or races. You feel me? How about the definition by Merriam-Webster? That's probably a little bit more down the line. Let's see if I can pull that up real quick. The definition of racism as it's in the Merriam-Webster dictionary. A belief that a race is the primary determinant of human traits or capacities, and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. Number two, a doctrine or political program based on the assumption of racism and designed to execute its principles. A political or social system founded on racism. Number three, racial prejudice or discrimination. There you go. So there is pretty much a really solid definition of what racism is. Now, a lot of people will say, you know, I don't know what racism is, but I know it when I see it. That kind of mentality. But have we broadened the terms? See, and this is a conversation that I think that a lot of people have to have. I think black people have to have this conversation. Have we broadened the terms so much that now it doesn't mean what it used to mean? Now it doesn't focus in on the thoughts, the behaviors, the dangerous behaviors that it used to, because it's now so broad that we can find that somebody can find racism in just about everything, just about everywhere, and frankly, in just about everybody. You know, I've been having this series of conversations with a young man where I work. Good guy, youngish, 20s. He told me that I kind of lean left, and I smiled and I said, well, yeah, you do. Last night in our conversation, one of the things that stuck out to me, he said, you know, yeah, I'm kind of butthurt that Trump got elected. Yeah. You know, but he's a good guy. He's a good, you know, I'm going to call him a good kid. He's younger than my son. Happy birthday to my son, William Alexander, who turned 28 today. Happy birthday, son. I love you and your mother loves you and we are proud of you. And, We are looking forward to great things for you. So I'm very, very excited about my son's birthday and what he has to offer. So there you go. So he's actually, the guy I'm talking to is actually younger than my kid. So I have a tendency to call them kids. You know, I had a birthday last Thursday, so I'm 58. So a lot of people in their 20s are kids to me, and I don't mean that in any sort of disparaging way. So good kid, good guy. Good conversations, actually. He's really open. He's not all caught. He's not all, you know, caught up, and he's not closed off. He's listening. And we were having this conversation a couple of days ago, and the subject rolled around a race. And I said, here's what happens. I asked him, young white dude, I said, well, how many black friends do you have? And then he looked at me and I said, not many, huh? What, are you a racist? But you don't like black people? And I just started going after him and going after him hard on that trick. And he was like, this is where I grew up. And he started backpedaling. And then I stopped. He's a good kid. So I let him off the hook. I said, this is what the world does. And this is what this conversation has turned into. So if you don't have enough black friends or enough black associates, then you can be considered a racist. So the candidate that doesn't have a lot of black people surrounding him or in his campaign or in his cabinet or you know what, at, you know what, or whatever. Look, he's probably a racist. Why? Because look, there's not a black face up there. Racist. What? Does that fit either of the definitions? So I don't have any black people working for me. How is that a leap to a belief that race is a primary determinant of human traits? So I don't have any black people working for me. So I must believe that black people are inferior. That's a leap. And especially if you don't know me, especially if you don't know the person, that's just a leap that you take, right? And is that okay? Is it wrong all the time? No. But is it wrong often enough? Can't rely on just that. So that's the kind of, you know, and so I went after him hard, and I tried to explain to him that's what the culture is doing, and that's how the culture is treating racism. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm a 58-year-old black man who has spent 51 years now in the South, grew up here, went to high school, went to college here, got married, raised a family, living here now as a damn near 60-year-old man. And in my youth, dated a white woman, white girl. We were kids. We were kids. We were, I don't know, I was 20. I was 19, 20. No, I was 18. Yeah, we met when I was 17. We dated after my birthday, so I was 18. You know, I was a kid. Heard all sorts of things. You know, dealt with all sorts of situations here in the South where it's supposed to be worse, at least according to people who live up north. So I think, and I've, for the most part, always lived with a few years of exception, but for the most part, lived in predominantly black neighborhoods. For the most part, not always, but predominantly black neighborhoods. So I think that I have perspective. I think that I have some perspective to comment on these things. I'm not the kid who grew up with a silver spoon living in the gated communities his whole life. I'm not the kid of biracial, you know, I'm not a biracial kid who lived in the suburbs behind a gated community, you know, in a gated community. who wants to speak out on oppression. And no, I'm not just talking about Colin Kaepernick. I'm talking about a lot of other people. So I'm saying I think I have perspective. Right? So did I see racism? Yes. And I've told this story on this program 100 times. Let's see, and I've got about, I'm going to limit myself to time here. So I'll tell it really quick. I was a little kid. I was like 11 or 12. I was in Woolworth in downtown Tampa. And I would go there every Saturday after leaving the library. Because, yes, I went to the library. No. I went to the library primarily, not because I was a nerd. I went to the library primarily because we didn't have any money. And I had to go somewhere. I had to leave the house on Saturday to go somewhere. And it was the only place of entertainment. So there was stuff there. And sometimes you could look at the bio books and see naked pictures of naked women. You could see boobies. It's the only place you could see boobies where nobody looked at you funny. But in any case, I went to the library. I left the library. I was on my way home. I went to Woolworth, as was my plan every Saturday, to get a payday bar. And I was walking around the store, and suddenly a big hand grabbed me, a man hand grabbed me, and said, "Where is it?" And I truly didn't have any idea what he was talking about. And the thing that I was worried about most was that his cigarette was burning on the back of my right hand. That's the thing that I was most worried about. And I still have the scar from it. It really hurt. It's fire on my hand. And then I saw the clerk, older white woman, older. But hell, when you're 11, everybody's 100, right? Everybody who's not 11 or 12 is 100. A 15-year-old is a grown-up, right, when you're 11. So I don't have any idea how old she was. She seemed older. She seemed to be, I don't know, she seemed to be in her 50s or 60s. Probably not. I saw, as she said, I saw him take it. I hadn't taken anything. So they took me back into the office at Woolworth. I was terrified. And they wrote up a no trespassing order for me, I guess, and let me out of the store. Did I tell anybody about the Tampa police officer whose cigarette burned the back of my hand? No, I didn't tell anybody. Did I tell my parents when I got home? Yeah, hell no, I didn't. I didn't say a word. I thought that I would take that experience to my grave until I got on social media. As I got older, no, when I was a little kid, I thought it was just that everybody had made a terrible mistake. Because I hadn't done it, because I hadn't done anything. And I wanted to go in later and plead my case, but I was too scared. So I didn't, which I think is a smart thing to do. So I did without that bit of sugar and, you know, peanuts on the end of my Saturdays. So later on, did I think it was racist? Did I think that this woman saw this little black kid with a little afro coming into the store and think that I'd stolen something? Now, what she thought I stole, and the story's already gone too long, was some contact lens cleaner. Now, at the time, I was wearing glasses. I still wear glasses. I had these black plastic rim glasses. I had never even freaking seen a contact lens up close. I'd only heard about them because some of my classmates were wearing them. I had never seen a contact lens, let alone, oh, this is contact lens cleaner. I think I'll steal it. I need some of this. Didn't make any, you know what, well, when I put it together just a few years later as a teenager, it didn't make any damn sense to me. So I think, you know, it had to be racism, right? Now, it may have been that she was just mistaken. And it may have been that she was mistaken and the cop was a racist son of a bitch who wanted just to jack up this little black. I was a little black kid. I wasn't like this big hulking black child, you know, with a hoodie. I think I had, I'm sure I just had some jeans on. I used to wear jeans back then. and a t-shirt and some sneakers. And my pants were pulled up because we didn't sag. I didn't look like a thug. I didn't have any thugness or thuggish ways about me. I was a little kid who just come from the library. I had some library books with me. Are you kidding me? The black glasses. I was damn near Urkel. You feel me? So even to this day, I'm like, what the hell? So I think I have some room to speak, and I'm going to have to extend because that story, when I tell it, always goes too long. It just always goes too long. But you, so I think I have some room to speak. How bad could that have gone? What if I would have chosen to fight the police officer in the store? I was frail. He could have eased. I mean, this is before the days of tasers and stun guns. What if I had totally lost my yit and decided that I was going to go for his firearm? He would have killed me on the floor of that Woolworths. And there would have been no protests. There would have been no boycotts. There would have been only the tears of my mother and my father and my grandparents. Because at that time, all of them were still alive. And that would have been it. And all of them would have said, well, that doesn't sound like Junior. It doesn't sound like he would just lose it. He must have been scared. Something else happened. But I didn't fight. I didn't argue. And they were wrong. That made me angry for a long time. A long time. I wonder now, golly, 40 years removed, if I'm even over it now. One incident, two people. I think one made a mistake, and I think one was a racist son of a bitch. That's how I. That's where I am. That's where I am, and that's where I have to leave it. My guess is that both of those people are dead now. I mean, they were adults when I was 11, and I'm 58. There's a good chance that both of them are dead. It's not a Woolworth anymore. You know? Woolworth store has been closed for, oh, Jesus. Been closed for 30 years. 30 years plus. So it's over, right? It's over. Done with. So is that racism? I think so. Is flying a Confederate flag in and of itself racist? Does that get you to the same point that I was as an 11-year-old boy in that Woolworth store? That's a leap, isn't it? Isn't it? When you start talking about microaggressions, please, does that get you to the same place as that 11-year-old boy in that Woolworth store who was truly alone? It does not. Now, I want to address, and I got to be honest with you, I don't know much about this story. I've only heard a little bit about it. This off-duty Dallas police officer. Mistake. I don't know. A lot of it, what I've heard, doesn't make any sense to me. Apparently, she was going home. She was off duty, and she was going to her apartment building and was at the wrong door, and put her passcode into the door, and it didn't open. And somebody answered the door, and then she freaked out, thought that someone was in her apartment, and she ended up shooting the guy in his own damn house. What? Something else is going on there. And I think that the Dallas police know something else is going on there, which is why the Texas Rangers are in on the case, investigating the case. Something is wrong there. I don't buy it for a minute. I don't buy it for a single solitary second that she just was so tired that she thought that that was her apartment. I've been tired. You've been tired. Hell, I've been exhausted. I remember I was leaving a gig in Ybor City where we played really late. It was WMNF's big festival that they have. They used to have in Ybor City. And my band went on at like 1:30 in the morning and didn't get done till like 3 and packed up. And I'm walking to the park. I'm walking to the parking lot to drive home. And my foot, I'm so tired that I can't lift my foot higher, you know what, high enough to get over the curb. And I trip and fall because I'm so tired. I've been tired. I've been exhausted. But you know what I did when I finally got myself together and got my car? I didn't miss my own damn house. I didn't pull up to the neighbor's house and bang on the door. I did not. And I got to tell you, I've got to tell you, to be honest with you, because I'm going to be out front with you. I've been drunk, too. Now, I haven't had any alcohol in almost 30 years. I haven't had, you know what, I haven't sat and drank alcohol even on a social basis in a long time. Now, in 30 years, have I had a glass of wine or so? Yeah, probably in the last 5 years, I've had like one or two glasses of wine. I have. But I tell you what, I've been drunk, like drunk off my ass kind of drunk. And I never went to the wrong door, banging on the door, trying to get into my own place. Always knew where I friggin' lived. So I don't buy it. Now, is it racism? I don't know. That I don't know. As a matter of fact, there's so much bullcrap surrounding that, I think probably not. Something else is going on there. Something else is going on there. Did she murder that dude? I think so. Did she murder that guy? Yes. Now we're just sort of kind of finding out why. I was on YouTube this morning and there was somebody who was talking about this, who may know more about it. And that person may know more about it than I do, but he didn't seem to. He likened it, what's happening in America, to the Purge, where black people are just being indiscriminately picked off. Well, if that's the case, white cops aren't doing their job in the Purge, nearly to the degree of some people that are in places like Chicago, where we've got what we got going on there. And that's another conversation that we've got to have and that we've got to be honest about. So the idea is, have we? Let me get back to the idea because I've gone down the bunny trail. Have we expanded what racism is so broadly that it doesn't have nearly the visceral meaning that it should? Of me being an 11-year-old boy grabbed by that white Tampa police officer with his cigarette. This is how long ago he was smoking a cigarette indoors, right? The cop was smoking a cigarette indoors. That's how long ago it was. And his cigarette was burning the back of my hand. And again, as I look back at the situation, I think that the clerk was mistaken. And the Camp Police Department officer was a racist son of a bitch who sort of got his kicks doing what he did to me. So do microaggressions raise to the level of a man being shot to death in his own damn house, or even a little boy, a little 11-year-old boy, being terrorized by a white police officer in Tampa? That was me. All right, we're going to take this call. We got a call from the 314 calling this afternoon. Must be off work. Or are you listening at your desk? Get back to work. But anyway, before you get back to work, how are you doing? Welcome, and how can we help you?
On racism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this thing, racism, has evolved today in 2018, whereas I, who remember the 1960s, is completely off the track. Because when I was coming up, we didn't look at racism for all the applications that it's applied to today.
That is true.
And if you look at somebody in a certain way, and you say, here's the point that people don't seem to understand. Racism is legal until you violate somebody's civil rights.
That is correct.
Then it becomes illegal. And people don't understand that. So when a person say, I don't like you, I hate you, that ain't racism. That's their opinion of you. But, you know, when I was a kid, and if we went to Union Pacific Railways, and I wanted to fill out an application like the older gentlemen, boys in the neighborhood, I use the word boy because they was older teenagers, they were filling out the application. I asked the white man, could I fill out one too? He asked me three questions. He said, have you ever hit your shin up against a table? I said, yeah. How about your elbow? I said, yes. And he mentioned another part. He said, well, that would leave calcium deposits on your bone, which would disqualify you for this job. Well, that's racism.
That's the weakest three questions ever. Have you ever passed gas? Yeah. Well, that could mean that your intestines are compromised, and that would disqualify you from this job. What?
The football players, and see, I'm a conservative, and I'll openly tell you I supported and voted for Donald Trump. And I get so much ridicule and slap back from black folks. See, they don't ask me what I did. They don't ask me why I voted for him. And they leave that out the equation.
Yep.
But, you know, the football players that's kneeling on the field, they have money managers that manage their money.
Yes, sir.
And they manage their money to get the highest return possible.
Certainly they do.
And that money is going into organizations, fund managers like Vanguard, BlackRock, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. And guess what stocks they are investing in, Mr. Lawson? They are investing in stocks that give a high rate of return, like Corrections Corporation of America.
Jesus.
And Geo.
Jesus. You're right.
And guess who else is investing in Nike? Trump Holdings. South Africa. And Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, contributes heavily to the Republican National Committee. See, folks don't have enough sense to look beyond their nose and understand how the intricacies work in not only the United States, but basically the world.
The world, yes, sir.
And one
right.
other thing, and one other thing, too. They are directing their attention to the wrong people, because blacks in a community that's majority black, a municipality, if you are letting your employees, the police, run havoc and kick your butt, the onus is on you because they're your employees. You have the ability to set the policies and the do's and don'ts in the operation of the police department. And there have been examples. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir, I do. You're absolutely right. I think that sometimes in some of these communities that we're talking about that have I don't want to be bumper sticker here, but have for a long time being controlled by people like Mayor Daley and others around the country, that these people who are elected officials who appoint police chiefs and the like who control these police departments who run ramshackle over these communities do this almost at the onus of the people that these communities continue to elect, as opposed to holding their elected officials responsible for the behavior of their employees in these areas.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And what they miss, and I think that you get, is that unfortunately this has become a more conservative approach. Wait a minute. The police aren't an entity that's separate, and the politicians aren't separate from me, and I don't look up to them like they're better than me. They actually work for me, and what they're doing isn't working for my community to the best of its ability, and this is where black people miss it. I'm just going to say it that way. Then something's got to change, because white folks, and I'm just going to be completely racial and non-politically correct. White folks figured that out a long, long time ago. If the police don't patrol a certain white area to the degree that white folks who live there think they should, they raise hell. Changes get made.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I know Ferguson very well, but you know, there's a community that's north and west of Ferguson. It's called Barrington Down. It's majority black. The average house running anywhere from $450,000,
$650,000, $750,000. Dang, too rich for my
blood. Those black people damn near drew a line and said, "Y'all ain't coming over in here."
Sort of Haiti and Dominican Republic. yeah, we look alike, but y'all got to stay on that side of the house.
We ain't your type. We look alike, but we not your type. I'm not lying to you.
I believe it.
And see, what you don't have now is that they have intimidated police departments in that area. You know, as many municipalities in that area, because that's the way St. Louis County is. Berkeley, you got Moline Acres, and so on, so on. Some Delwood, Richard, right next to Ferguson. That the police damn near don't stop patrolling the way they should. You got people, and I'm not saying it is. You got black motors, and I ain't saying this don't go on in the Vietnamese neighborhood and the community, but I'm looking at this community. You got people here that has total disregard of anything regulations. They drive like they want to. They have expired plates, no plates. They have expired paper plates. I was behind a guy yesterday, and his paper plates expired in March.
Jeez.
And he's driving his car.
He doesn't care.
Yeah. And what happens if you have an accident with them?
You know
what I'm saying?
You're screwed.
A long time ago, blacks moved out of the city of St. Louis. Those was fleeing what they seen was coming. And I'm going to tell it like it is. And they went into these counties in these suburbs, and they bought homes. They have great school districts, education going on. They kept their houses up, and they expect to receive an appreciation in the assets that they invested in decades ago. But when you have these progressives that would insert people into these areas that have no means whatsoever to sustain what it is that they're living in, guess what happened? You start seeing a plummet to value. And we're talking about some elderly black. They are being stripped of the assets that they have accumulated. And that is totally wrong.
You're absolutely right.
Because if you don't establish these generational assets where you can pass it on to your siblings, your grandchildren, you don't know how valuable a grandparent is. A grandparent can fund a child's education, college education. They got the ability to do so. But if you got these other forces that's working against that, then now you have created, well, the likelihood of your Chicago's and Baltimore's all over again.
You've created generational poverty. You've created generational dependence on government. That's what you've created, because unless – you know what? Unless that grandparent can fund, because of asset management and wealth accumulation, another generation, then you have what we have now, and you have this undying circle of this that ends up being our death spiral.
and student loans. See, I know I fund my grandsons out of my pocket. He don't have no student loans. But if you don't have that, and really, you know, a lot go. See, I had to sacrifice early on to get to the position where I am today. That required. People talk about it takes a village, Mr. Lawson. It takes a functional village.
Amen.
But anyway, I know that you receive probably because of your conservative views. You receive a lot of pushback and called names and everything. But let me tell you something. You keep holding your head up high because you are doing a whole lot more good than you are bad. And one other thing, too.
Yes.
There's a lot of African-Americans in this country that has a lot of expertise, skills. You know, when Obama first got elected and they had the issue with ExxonMobil and the oil spill down in the Gulf, I am willing to bet you, because I know of these people, when they sat around the table to discuss the litigations that was involved in that, you had the Department of Justice and you had those that was representing ExxonMobil. I am willing to bet you if ExxonMobil had 10 representatives sitting at the table, either 4 or 5 of them was black because of the people they have working for them. Those are the people like that and in other areas that need to be consulted on how to solve the solutions and also what you need to do to prepare yourself for the potentials that are now and coming down the pipe. Now, I'm not saying that protests and your Jesse Jackson and Al Sharptons have not been useful, but they haven't been strategically used like they should be. If you prepare 500 black kids in a certain area, say a STEM field like mechanical engineers, and they having problems breaking through that shell, that's when you bring out those protesters. That's when you bring out those what do you call it, rebel rousers. But now they out there just on any drop of a hat, and that's totally ridiculous.
And you're absolutely right. I think and we've been saying this forever. The battlegrounds have changed because the conditions and the issues have changed. If you got 500 kids in a STEM program and for some reason they can't break through in those programs, then now you've got a real reason to raise hell. But now the thing is, what I get more than anything when I see the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and the on and ons is that they're not even directly deciding on what issues are important. That the walking papers for the new age black protesters, even like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, are coming from somewhere else. They're coming from issues that may or may not have anything to do with the real conditions and real struggles of black people in this country who are trying to break through to the next level. They aren't protesting any of that kind of stuff. They end up, unfortunately, rallying around people who are ne'er-do-wells and malcontents to protect their rights. And because you're protecting their rights, somehow you're protecting mine. Somebody who hasn't broken any laws, somebody who hasn't broken any windows, somebody who hasn't broken anybody's house, somebody who hasn't been any negative contact with the police for 20 years. But now in defending them, that you sort of think that that's sort of helping me. No, what helps me is that if we can create an economic climate in my community so I can continue and my 28-year-old, happy birthday, son, can be effective and can have a wealth accumulation, that's the stuff that we ought to be raising hell about. The battlegrounds have changed. It's changed. Mm-hmm. It's more than the afro that I used to wear and the raised fist. It's finding a way to really be successful long term. You know what they say? You know what the best revenge is, right? Success.
You're absolutely right. The best revenge is competition and taking from their slice of the pie to create your slice of pie. That's the best revenge. This thing about white supremacy being no. White supremacy, and when you sit down at the table speaking about offshore oil well drilling, equity financing, leveraged buyouts, boycotts, and sanctions, the face behind that usually at the table is white. And if you want to fight against that, you got to compete against them. Yep. And don't say it cannot be done because they lose all the damn time. I can quote you and point you to many instances. But if you're not there in the game participating, if you got your, do you know how much talent is been lost to produce one LeBron James? Think about it. When he first started playing, parents had to equip their children, had to get them to practice, had to provide them with travel expenses, travel fees to go from tournament to tournament. Look at all the resources that was expended by other parents for their children so that they can get on the court and provide him with the highest level of competition. And where are they at today? They gone by the wayside. Now, I'm not That's saying there's something wrong with that, but here's the point. Look at the other areas. We are in basketball, football. We used to be pretty well in baseball. My grandson is a college baseball player because I said, this is what you're going to do. He's an injured. I said, this is what you're going to do. I don't leave my kids to choose what they're going to do on their own because kids are kids. They're going to choose the easiest thing possible. I mean, that's just natural. But if you know what areas of industry and other concerns in this country that you are lacking in as who you are, as an ethnic group, then you have to go through the sacrifice and the hard work to prepare people, whereas they can go into these areas and take out what they need and so justly deserve. You can't leave it up to other people. Nobody, Mr. Lawson, is going to teach your son how to take power away from their kids. These folks ain't crazy. No.
That's an insane, and that's sort of an insane, you know, thing, you know, and I think I wrote in a note somewhere that people expecting folks to have, you know, white folks to have this solid on this road to Damascus moment that, wait, we've been wrong all this time. Here, I'm giving you my child's inheritance. You know, what? I wouldn't do that. And why should we expect anybody else to? You know what? And you make a great point. This idea of what we concentrate on and what we know about. What we don't know is about leveraged buyouts and things that you mentioned. But do you know what we do know about? We do know about the feud between Cardi B and that other chick. I can't even know her name. That stuff we know a lot about. We know a lot about Real Housewives of Atlanta. We know a lot about, you know what, this rapper and that rapper and that rapper and how many children they have. We know a lot about that stuff. We are well-versed in the nonsense and the minutia. But what we're not well-versed in is the things that can make us successful generationally. That's what we don't have any idea about. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure when that happened. I'm not sure when the switch happened where it wasn't okay to be smart anymore. When being smart and being studious became being white. I'm not sure what that is, but I'm sure I lived through it because it didn't used to always be that way.
Well, I tell you what, I never experienced it because I never heard anything like that. And I guess it's just me. But, you know, getting back to the football players, those football players can leverage to see more blacks in areas like sports medicine, landscaping and field maintenance, marketing, advertisement, sports writers, sports announcers, studio, sound, audio, video assistance for audience. You don't see many blacks in those areas. So why aren't they not leveraging their attention to get this out of these clubs and say, we want to see more blacks in these areas? Video technicians to provide feedback. Why come you don't see more blacks in there? Why come we don't see more blacks in tennis, golf, in those sports where the money goes for scholarships that's generated from the football field and the basketball court where you are predominant? You understand what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying. You're absolutely right. And I wish I had an answer for you other than a lot of these narratives that these young players are spouting aren't their own narrative. They're mimicking and pushing a narrative that's being pushed to them. And so it all seems all heartfelt, but it's really somebody else directing them and using them as a mouthpiece and a puppet. Otherwise they could turn and go, we've got the power, especially in the NFL. Because mm-hmm. they freaking dominate the sport. I mean, black people dominate the sport, except the way that Aaron Rodgers came back in that game on Monday and dominated Khalil Mack and the rest of the Bears. But they dominate the sport simply by numbers, and can simply sit down at
the bargaining table and say to the owners and to the networks, here's what we'd like to see. We've got your attention now with the whole kneeling and the Nike and the nonsense, but here's what we'd like to see, because that's a real generational change. We've got kids in black – we got kids all over the country who are studying these things. We'd like to see more black technicians on the field. We'd like to see them more in the booth or in the truck from the, you know what, from the NFL films. And we'd like to see more of that, because that's really going to help our communities from an internal generational thing. That's what we'd like to see. If nothing else, we'd like to see Roger Goodell write a big ass check to the National Negro, this is so funny, the National Negro College Fund. We'd like to see you write a big check to them.
And you know what? In the National Society of Black Engineers, you know the last two conventions they have in Pittsburgh and also in Kansas, Northrop Grumman hired 400 black engineers right off the floor 2 years in a row. That's a total of 800. But you know what else they should do? Once you get these things, tell Rosedale, the next game, next Sunday, all our players will have those little bitty American flags waving them back and forth. Would that not be good for marketing?
Well, and it was. I think Goodell go, and we'll bail your ass out.
There you go.
Because you are in the soup, bro. We know you're in the soup, and we put you there. And we can keep you there if we like. But, you know, we sort of hurting our bottom line a little bit, too. So do this.
And the blacks that's going to be out there in the community, they the same ones been around for the last 100 years, hooping and hollering, raising up their fists and so forth, and they don't do jack. No,
never.
Do that, and I guarantee you, then the outcome would be a whole lot better than the direction that it's going out. Because right now it's a stalemate. You create an animosity and everything else. Blacks don't feel them stands up. Those whites just feel those stands up. Those commercials are not directed at black people. They're directed at whites and others. Look, man, I appreciate your platform. I'm sorry it took up so much time on your show.
No, it was
good.
Thank you so much.
I want you to hang in there, all right?
I will. I promise. All right, thank you. I've been on this platform since 2008. I'm not going anywhere. And you're right. I've been called everything but a child of God. But, you know, I know who I am in God. So I'm good.
All right, then. All right, well, I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, sir. Take care. Have a great day. You know, it's great. It's good. You know, when you press the button here, you just never know. I'm telling you. You never know, because there's no way to, when you're doing it by yourself, there's no way to screen call, so you don't know. It's always nice to be encouraged, always have a good conversation. There's so much that we could be that can be done, and the call is right. This definition of racism has been stretched to where it doesn't mean anything. And who's it been stretched by? And for what reason? We need to get back to what things mean. Racism doesn't mean, like the caller said, that someone looks at you funny or looks at you in a way that you don't like, and now you start screaming racism. It's funny that he said something that we say in my house all the time. Racism isn't illegal. It's not illegal. Someone could not like you because you're Cuban. Someone cannot like you because you're Vietnamese. Someone cannot like you because you're black. Someone could not like you because you're white. Someone could not, and none of that's illegal. I think that this definition has been broadened so much to, we've got a generation of people who believe that racism is illegal. Well, the president is a racist, so he should be impeached. Huh? No, racism isn't a crime. It's an undesirable characteristic in a person, but indeed not a crime. I heard conservatives saying that, you know what, that Obama is racist against whites. Okay, he may have been, but again, same thing. It's not a crime. It's not a desirable characteristic that you want in a person, but not a crime. The Ku Klux Klan has right in America to exist as long as two very important things are met. They don't get any public funds, and they don't break any crimes. The Ku Klux Klan, Knights of the White Camellia, the skinhead groups,
reprehensible human beings. Reprehensible. They have right to exist. Only in America, folks, will we have I wish it was as simple as Democrat v. Republican. But we have got working communist groups here. Why do we have working communist groups here? Because our system allows for it. Why is one of the most top 10 websites in the world and in the United States a porn site? Because the First Amendment allows for it. Yes, a site where women are degraded, uses as sex objects. There's a whole golden shower thing on X-Hamster and Pornhub where women are used as toilets. Why is that allowed to exist? It's allowed to exist because of the First Amendment. There is a negative side to, there's another side to free speech that we don't like. We live in probably one of the freest countries in the world. And someone has said that level of freedom could, if not, we're not careful, be our undoing. So this idea that racism is the worst thing that someone can, a racist is the worst thing you can be, is simply not true, because it ain't illegal. And the caller was right. I'm glad he brought that up, that being a racist in America is not illegal. You can dislike somebody for any reason you make up. It doesn't have to be real, doesn't have to be reasonable. For any reason that you make up, you can dislike somebody. What you can't do is commit crimes against them. That's what you can't do. Because we are a nation of laws. All right, listen. We've been on longer than I thought it was going to be long, but I had a good call and I had to sort of, I had to ride that out. Y'all appreciate that. Listen, if you like what we do, share, like and share this with your friends. Hell, if you don't like what we do, share with your friends. we're going to try to be on more often. We're going to try to do more. You know, if you go back to the archive, you can see that my first program here on Blog Talk Radio was March 25th, 2008. So we've been doing this a long time. We don't do it as often as I like, but we're going to try to get back to it. So I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you listening on all the platforms that we're on now. Stitcher and what is it? Yeah, all of it. There's a bunch of them out there. Google Podcast and iHeart.com, iTunes. I'd love to hear from you and get an email back at WLS860@gmail.com. That's WLS860@gmail.com. Let me know where you heard the show. That'll help us in our syndication to make, to push a little bit more of this, push a little less of this, make some adjustments. Maybe do some advertising here, maybe not do some so much advertising there, that kind of thing. I really appreciate the help. Anyway, we got to get out of here and make room for somebody else. All right, so until we see you again, go out there and learn something, love somebody, and for goodness sakes, you take care of yourself. My name is William Lawson. This is Fight Back. We'll see you when we see you. Bye-bye now.